This is David Williams from the Health Business Blog. I'm speaking today with Charlie Baker, candidate for governor. Charlie, thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here, Dave.
Charlie, does Chapter 224 represent the right approach to addressing rising healthcare costs? And if not, where would you say it misses the mark, and what would you do differently?
Well, I think you know, Dave, that I've been in and around the healthcare policy space for a lot of my professional career, having served as Secretary of Health and Human Services and as the CEO of Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates, a big prepaid group practice in Massachusetts, as well as the CEO of Harvard Pilgrim for 10 years, where we took it from the leadership to number one in the country for member satisfaction and clinical effectiveness. So this question about healthcare costs is one that I've certainly been wrestling with for most of my career. And I guess what I would say is my answer to this is it depends. And what I mean by that is there are certain core elements that I believe are fundamental to dealing with the rising cost of healthcare. And while there's a lot in Chapter 224, if the folks who are involved in the work of the commission that was established by this can address some of the issues I'm about to raise, then yeah, I think it will be the right approach. But if they can't or they don't, then I would expect that we'll continue to have some of the same problems we've had up until now. The first one, and it's one I've talked about for 10 years, is the lack of transparency around price and performance in healthcare. I think you know as well as I do that the same service provided to the same person with the same outcome at four or five different provider organizations in Massachusetts under the current system can translate into prices that vary by as much as 200 or 300%. So a service that basically delivers the same result to the same person at one institution might cost $500, and done at a different institution, it will cost $2,000. And that information is known to many of the people who currently work in the healthcare system, but it's not known to many people who are actually receiving the service. And I've said for a really long time, and frankly, every study that's been done on this has said the same thing, that if we don't create a more transparent system where people have access to information around how people perform and how much they get paid for doing that work, we will never create the sense of urgency and focus that's going to be required to deal with the cost problem. So that's point number one. Point number two, and this again is not a big secret to people who are in the healthcare world, 5% of the population spends about 50% of the money, and 95% of the population spends about 5% of the money. And that's just a function of the fact that most people don't get sick that much, and you know, year over year just don't incur a lot of healthcare costs. But that 5% that we're talking about that spends half the money is typically very sick, many times managing multiple chronic illnesses of one type or another. And in my view, we should think about a more proactive and a more sort of on-the-ground and consumer patient-centric approach to serving that 5%. Because a number of studies that have been done and a number of articles that have been written, several, by the way, by Atul Gawande, who writes for The New Yorker and is a surgeon over at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, has also written a couple of books on this stuff, have pointed out that because we don't have a healthcare system that thinks differently about that 5% that's very medically complex and comes up with a different way of taking care of those folks, they end up pinballing all over the healthcare system and in many cases getting suboptimal care, spending too much time in the ER, too many times on return visits, and they don't get the care in the community that they need to stay healthy, to stay well, and to stay out of the hospital. And for my money, and for my way of thinking, you know, if we really want to get serious about improving the quality of care for our sickest members of society, and at the same time doing something about the rise in healthcare costs, we've got to come up with different solutions to deal with that 5% that spends 50% of the money. And the third thing I'd mention, and I'm happy to talk about other stuff as well, and this one is where 224 has the potential, I think, to move us in the opposite direction. There's an enormous amount of administrivia in healthcare. And I think one of the things the state of Massachusetts should focus on is working with the provider community and with others to reduce the amount of non-value-added paperwork and administrative bureaucracy that currently exists within the current system. I can't tell you how many people I talk to day in and day out, both when I was at Harvard Pilgrim in my prior life and today, who tell me that they spend a lot of time on a lot of stuff that doesn't improve the quality of care, reduce the cost of care, or deliver a better outcome for patients. And we need to come up with a very focused and disciplined approach to dealing with that, because there's a lot of money we're chewing up and stuff that isn't really adding very much to the patient experience.
Now, you partially answered this this question for me, I think, in the first one, which was you mentioned the differences of rates that are paid to different providers. And as you mentioned, there are certain provider systems that are reimbursed a lot more for the same services, even if there's no discernible difference in quality. You mentioned transparency as a solution. Are there roles that specifically that the state would have to play even more directly than in transparency in addressing those disparities?
I actually think that the state has the ability to make the system more transparent right now based on all the legislation that's been passed over the course of the past decade or so. And I think the state should be a lot more aggressive about making that information publicly available. I think the public, frankly, has a right to know. And frankly, I also think providers that do a really good job at a really reasonable price should be rewarded for that and given the public recognition they deserve for coming up with smarter, better, more effective ways to provide care. The other thing I would say with respect to this, Dave, and this is not news to somebody like you, is the other thing this would do is it would point out the significant difference in what Medicaid, Medicare, and a lot of the private payers pay for services. I mean, again, I'm back to the same service delivered in the same institution. If you're a Medicaid patient, that costs that provider gets paid one amount for it. If you're a Medicare patient, they get paid another amount, and if you're a commercial patient, they get paid another amount. And as you know, there's a very significant difference between those three categories. And you can have situations right now in healthcare where the commercially insured population, the folks with Blue Cross or Harvard Pilgrim or Tufts, just to name three, are paying significantly above what the Medicaid program or the Medicare program are paying for what, in effect, is the same service. And it may be that once everybody sees that in the public domain and sees that information publicly available, they'll be okay with it. But it's a big issue in why the cost of health insurance on the private side keeps going up, because we're asking or we're demanding through state and federal policy more for services than people on public coverage. And I think that's more sunshine is better here. If everybody looks at it and says they're fine with it, that's one thing. But that ought to be something that people are made aware of.
Now, there's more than a dozen state agencies that have some role in healthcare, and I'm wondering if you think there's an opportunity to consolidate or rationalize any of those.
You know, I spent several years, as you know, Dave, in state government over both health and as the Secretary of Health and Human Services and as the Secretary of Administration and Finance, so I am well aware of the number of different state agencies that are involved in the healthcare world. And one of the concerns I've always had about the state's approach to a lot of this stuff is when we have a problem, we create a new agency. And then whether the problem gets solved or not, you know, we've created a new agency. And as a result, we end up fragmenting a lot of the decision-making and a lot of the data collection and a lot of the regulatory activity across multiple agencies. And I've talked to plenty of providers over the years, and I experienced this myself when I was at Harvard Pilgrim, where we get regulatory direction from one part of state government that runs directly in the opposite direction from the regulatory input we get from another part of state government. So we literally found ourselves at times looking across the table at each other and saying, well, if we comply with this department's regulation and the rulemaking that we just got from them, we're going to be out of compliance with this other one. And I think there is certainly an opportunity, a big opportunity, to rationalize the way the state works with and relates to, you know, all the players in the system. And I think in some ways that would be a really good thing for providers, it would be a really good thing for health plans, it would be a really good thing for other service providers, and by the way, I think it would be a really good thing for consumers too.
Now, government policy has encouraged adoption of electronic medical records, both federal policy but state policy too. But there are a lot of providers that complain about the systems, and the benefits have been somewhat slow to materialize. And I'm wondering whether you think that state government should play a role in helping to realize the potential of health information technology.
You know, Massachusetts is already involved in a number of ways on this issue, as I think you probably know. My view on this one is, and I would say this both as a regulator, as the head of the physician group, as the former head of health plan, and also, by the way, somebody who spent several years serving on the board of Athena Health, which is one of the more well-known in Massachusetts-based providers of practice management information technology, primarily to smaller physician groups, but also to some larger groups now as the organization has matured over time. I think the biggest thing government can do in this space is to make sure that provider organizations are required and expected to use open source technology so that when some patient needs to go from one provider organization to another, their medical information can travel with them so that they don't need to be the one who is sort of the primary owner and supplier of their medical record. One of the major reasons people wanted to create electronic medical records in healthcare was so that we would have, the clinician community would have better access to data at the point they actually have to make decisions around providing care to people. And as I think you probably know, over the course of the past 10 years or so, a lot of the growth in electronic medical records has been in what I would call sort of closed systems, where people build electronic medical records that work only for the doctors and the providers within their system, but don't connect and communicate with anybody else's system. And since patients, as a general rule, don't always stay within the same network to access the services and the care that they receive, I think one of the most important things government can and should do is to basically say, you know, if you're going to have an electronic medical record, we think that's great, but that electronic medical record needs to be able to share data with other provider organizations so that patients don't continue to believe that they have to be responsible for owning and carrying around their medical records from place to place and provider to provider and doc to doc.
Charlie, hepatitis C is 3 or even 4 times more common than HIV, and there's some new drugs that can cure the infection that are coming on the market in 2014, but they're quite expensive. What role should the state play in ensuring that Massachusetts residents are tested and linked to care and that they have access to these new medications?
You know, this is a good question. And what I would say, I guess, is the answer on this one, and I don't mean to sound political, is it depends. When I think back on the way Massachusetts, and we did some of this when I was in state government, dealt with vaccines for kids, okay, and, you know, worked with schools and with health plans, and through the Department of Public Health with some of the folks that manufactured these vaccines for kids, we put in place a pretty strong and pretty solid community-based network to make sure that we had universal vaccinations in Massachusetts. And I guess what I would say in answer to this one, Dave, is it depends a little bit on facts that I don't believe are currently available to us. And what I would like to do is collect more data around the facts. And as we start to develop a sense about what best practice is here, use a model that's similar to the one we've used before in some of these other areas, which involves, you know, provider community, the plans, the state, probably through the Department of Public Health, and develop a sort of delivery strategy here that builds on some of the success we've had with sort of joint efforts with the provider community and the plans before.
Now, obviously, healthcare is an issue in the campaign, and on the ballot, not only will the voters need to choose different candidates, but also there are some healthcare-related ballot questions. I'm wondering if you have any views on those questions.
Well, obviously, in the first question, I think the folks in your audience should certainly give me a good hard look on the first question with respect to who they should vote for governor. As far as the, I'm assuming the two ballot questions you're talking about, one is the is the financial reporting request, and then the other one is on staffing ratios?
That's right.
Okay. On the first one, what I would say is I need to do a little more homework on what I believe the state currently has the ability to do with respect to transparency. I mean, I know the state has the ability to do more on price and performance than they've done, just based on conversations I've had with people in the legal community and also folks who work in and around state government and in the provider community. And so since I absolutely believe the state has more capacity to create more transparency around that stuff than they're currently doing, I would like to spend a little time on getting a better understanding about what I believe the state has the ability to do with respect to transparency around some of these other issues around financial reporting and the like before I make a call on whether or not we need to go down the route of a ballot question to do this. I think the state may have the ability right now to make a bunch of this information available. So I would like to spend a little bit of time figuring that one out. And on the staffing, the nurse staffing question, you know, having been on the provider side and on the plan side and having worked closely with the nursing community in my job when I was in state government as well, there's nobody who likes and admires and appreciates nurses more than me. And frankly, when I was in state government, we pursued a number of initiatives to broaden the authority and the ability of nurses to do different things. And that was important because in many cases, they had the training and the ability to significantly broaden their portfolio with respect to what they were able and capable of doing under existing and proposed state law and regulation. And I would just want to make sure that whatever we're doing here on this ratio question doesn't freeze in place the notion that we absolutely positively know and understand what it is we think nurses should be doing, and that's that. And I just want to talk to some of the folks that I know in the nursing community about that before I sign off on that question as well. My long story short here is I'm going to get both of these in Navy, but I have some homework to do here, and obviously we have 10 months to go before we all vote on this. We'll certainly have another chance to talk about it, I'm sure.
Now, clearly your views on healthcare and these questions we've discussed are informed by your, you know, two-plus decades of experience in healthcare. Are there any specific things that you would point to that you learned from running Harvard Pilgrim that would be useful to you as governor?
I think the time I spent, I think it's bigger than that, Dave. I think, you know, having spent 8 years working in state government and Bill Weld and Paul Cellucci's cabinet, combining that with the fact that I did spend 10 years as the CEO of Harvard Pilgrim, I think that gives me a unique ability to think about management and leadership as a major player in both state, the public sector and the private sector. And I would say the two big things that I learned at Harvard Pilgrim that I believe can be incorporated into my role as the chief executive of the Commonwealth, again, based on the fact that I've actually spent a bunch of time working in four state government, would be number one, you have to be able to create a culture of accountability. Set the bar high, hire really good people, work with the people that you have, but come up with metrics and ways to monitor performance and then expect people to perform and achieve to that level. And one of the things I used to say to people all the time when I was in state government and when I was at Harvard Pilgrim, I don't care how good your plan sounds, I don't care how good your plan looks on paper, if you don't execute, if we don't execute on that plan will not succeed. And I think one of the things I can bring to this job is a tremendous appreciation and understanding about how important it is to follow through and execute on your plans and your objectives, and that is not something that happens by accident. That's something that happens by being, sort of somebody who sets the bar high and cheerleads for folks when it's appropriate to cheerlead, but is also known by the team and by the folks in the organization as somebody who will hold people accountable and will expect them to perform. The second thing, Harvard Pilgrim, as you know, went from receivership to number one in the country for member satisfaction when I was there. We created a real culture of service in that organization. People got up every day believing, went to work believing that it was important that we figure out a smarter, better, more effective way to reduce errors and enhance the performance of our interactions with our customers, with providers, with docs, with pharmacies, with everybody we did business with. And I would like to bring that same maniacal approach to dramatically enhancing and improving the state's ability to think about service and to deliver service on behalf of the people of the Commonwealth. We leverage technology, we use best practices, and we learned a lot from one another. So that over the course of the time I was there, we went from not really being very good on the service piece to being better than everybody else. And I would very much like to have the chance to turn Massachusetts into a national model around its ability to deliver a high-quality service experience for everybody. People are looking to get permits. People are looking to get questions answered. People are looking for guidance with respect to regulatory policy and all the rest.
Charlie, much of the emphasis in healthcare reform is on adult patients. Is there a need for a specific focus on children's health?
Well, I think the state of Massachusetts has done a terrific job over the years in expanding healthcare coverage for adults and children. I mean, we were one of the first states to create a children's health plan. When I worked in the Weldon Fulci administration, we continued to grow and expand that program for kids. And I think we were way ahead of the rest of the country, if I recall correctly, in terms of actually getting kids signed up, not just for that program, but also for Medicaid. And so I think, again, my biggest worry all along has been that Massachusetts has done a pretty good job of covering both its adults and its kids. And I worry about the impact this federal reform law is going to have on the Commonwealth's ability to continue to do the things that have worked here, as has been represented by sort of the inability of the Health Connector to get anything done that works for the people who needed to rely on the Connector to get their coverage. And I've actually talked, David, to people who have kids who have issues, who have checks that were cashed by the Connector who still don't have health care coverage. And here we are. And they call me up and I talk to them about it and they said, what should I do? You know, if I have to fill this script for my kid, it's $90. What do you think I should do? And I think in some ways we have tremendous work we need to do to make sure that Massachusetts can get back to doing what works here in Massachusetts, not just for adults, but also for kids. The other thing I would say, and you and I talked about this as part of this discussion previously, I'm a huge believer in expanding the capacity and support for primary care, and that includes pediatrics, which I think is an area that has been neglected by the healthcare system over the course of the past decade or so. And I think that's absolutely part of the answer. It's not just internal medicine and behavioral health, but when I talk about primary care, I'm also talking about pediatrics, and I think we need to make a big investment there as well.
Terrific. Charlie, thank you for answering all my specific questions here about healthcare. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Dave, I think the only other thing I would add is just to say that I think I bring a unique blend of public and private sector experience to this job. I think I've been able to demonstrate my capacity to lead and to succeed as a manager and as a leader in the healthcare space over the course of the past 20 years. I think that's a really important area for us as we go forward as a state, not just in terms of, you know, quality and cost, but also as a major employer and a major source of innovation and entrepreneurship in Massachusetts. And the other thing I would just point out, I'm a big believer in discipline and focus. And I don't think anybody will bring a more aggressive approach to making sure the state's books are well managed and the state's assets are well managed than I will if I'm successful and people choose to give me the opportunity to serve as their governor in 2015 and beyond.
Charlie Baker, candidate for governor, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dave. Look forward to seeing you.